since 2010, Governor Walker here in Wisconsin and Governor Mark Dayton across the border in Minnesota have worked to enact starkly different political agendas, so different that the Washington, D.C. think tank, the Economic Policy Institute, thought it would be really interesting to run side-by-side numbers. The new study came out yesterday. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. David Cooper is Senior Economic Analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. His new study is called As Wisconsin's and Minnesota's Lawmakers Took Divergent Paths, So Did Their Economies. He's joining us from NPR headquarters in Washington. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, I think we are nice enough neighbors to Minnesota, and the feeling is reciprocal. We keep it professional on the up and up between the two states. Why did you want to run the numbers and compare Minnesota and Wisconsin head-to-head like this? It feels awkward.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't want to create any tension there. The truth is, I'm certainly not the first person to do this sort of analysis. I think over the last 7 years, because the differences in the policy agendas of these two states have been so stark, as you mentioned, a lot of folks have been looking at what's been happening in the two states, because otherwise there's a lot of similarities between the two states. As you noted, you're very friendly with your neighbors. I think you have a lot in common with your neighbors in Minnesota. And I think historically there's been a lot of similarities between the two states. They have similar population demographics. They're roughly similar in size in terms of the workforce and the geography. And they're right next to each other. So that helps too. It's about as close as you can get to a natural experiment to look at how these differences in state policy might drive different economic outcomes.
So there's this cooperative relationship across the border, but how did you control for differences between the two states in the study?
Yeah, so full disclosure, this is not a highly sophisticated causal analysis, the type of thing that economists would do if they were trying to isolate the specific impacts of one particular policy. So I'm not doing any sorts of controls for those differences between the two states. I'm sort of acknowledging that there are differences, but I think that the similarities are strong enough that you can still make this comparison. And I actually did some backup analysis of the two states to make this point. We released another blog post this morning that looks at this that you can find at epi.org, just showing that if you look at things like the job trends between the two states in the business cycle leading up to the Great Recession, the two states followed a very similar path. Job growth was about the same in the two states during that business cycle. Losses in the recession were about the same. Wisconsin had a slightly larger losses, but overall pretty much the same. So in other words, things were moving in a very similar direction prior to the Great Recession and prior to the elections of Governors Walker and Dayton. But then after that, they went in two different directions. So something changed. And I think a lot of that change can be attributed to the differences in the policies that those two governments adopted.
So here we are, Great Recession almost in the rearview mirror. Elections happen in both states. Two governors elected, two very different agendas. Mark Dayton in Minnesota, very progressive, and Governor Scott Walker looking at a very highly conservative agenda. So then how did the study look at the economic policy and be able to tie that to working families and working people? How did you make those connections?
Yeah. So when you want to understand how these changes are affecting ordinary folks, there's a number of statistics that you have to look at that are beneath the sort of headline numbers. You know, I do mention GDP and unemployment and things like that in the paper, but we also look at things like what's happening to wages, because the vast majority of families in this country and in those two in your state and your neighbor get their income through what they get out of a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So if we see what's happening to wages, it gives us a pretty good sense of what's happening to the welfare of households and workers in the state. Similarly, we looked at what happened to household incomes, median household incomes, median family incomes, things like that, to get a sense of how this was affecting ordinary folks. And what we found is that the numbers look much better in Minnesota than they do in Wisconsin. We also looked at poverty rates, too, another measure of well-being. So again, looking at these more family-specific, more worker-specific figures that get sort of under the hood of those top-line numbers to understand how this is affecting people's everyday lives.
Well, let's park it at wage growth here for a moment. If an economy is humming right along, earnings should increase regularly to keep up with the average cost of living. Why is that metric important to understanding the overall labor market in the two states?
Yeah, so, you know, you can look at things like the unemployment rate, and that's a good first start in trying to understand the health of the labor market. But there's a lot more to it, because the unemployment rate, for example, is only calculated by people who are looking for jobs and can't find them, divided by the folks who are looking and have jobs. In a tight labor market, what happens is employers have to start competing with each other in order to attract and retain staff. They have to start bidding up their wages in order to attract folks. And so when you have a really healthy labor market, wages start to rise because employers are facing that competition. They have to try and raise their compensation packages to attract folks. And so if you have weak wage growth, even if the unemployment rate is low, it tends to mean that, well, you know, maybe things aren't as rosy in your labor market as they appear at first glance. And what I found in the study is that if you look at wage growth between the two states, at basically every single point on the wage distribution, Minnesota had faster wage growth than Wisconsin. In fact, over that entire 7-year period from 2010 to 2017 that I looked at, wages in Wisconsin, the median wage in Wisconsin, just barely kept up with inflation, whereas in Minnesota, it was rising by almost 3 percentage points faster than inflation. So that's a meaningful difference for folks who are you know, looking for a little bump in their paycheck.
What did you find out about low-income workers and the comparison with Minnesota and Wisconsin? What did you see there?
Yeah, so if you look at wages at the bottom of the wage scale, these low-wage workers, wage growth for those folks was larger in Minnesota as well. So wages at the 10th percentile, so someone who is making more than 10% of other workers and less than 90% of all other workers, in Minnesota, that person's wages went up by 8.6% faster than inflation over the 7-year period. In Wisconsin, they only went up 6.3%. So maybe not a huge difference, but that's meaningful for someone who's living paycheck to paycheck and not making very much. Similarly, 20th percentile wages rose by about 10% in Minnesota, and again, about a little over 6% in Wisconsin. And this is one of those areas where I think you can point to a specific policy decision that's driving these differences, and that's the fact that Minnesota raised its minimum wage during this time period. Wisconsin did not. They still saw some wage growth, presumably because of the improving health of the labor market over this time. But Minnesota had that improving labor market, plus they raised their minimum wage, and I think that's why we see this larger bump for low-wage workers in Minnesota.
How do you explain the gap in wages between men and women closing more in Minnesota than in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. The median wage for men actually went down in Wisconsin. So, you know, what happened there is you had some decline in the gap between men and women's wages at the median in Wisconsin, but it was actually for bad reasons. It's because men's wages were falling while women's wages went up a lot. In Minnesota, I think we had a decline of about 3 percentage points in the gap between men's wages and women's wages. I think a good portion of that could be this same minimum wage effect, because we do have a lot of low-wage workers are women. So when you raise the minimum wage, it has a disproportionate impact on women workers. It could also be that the types of jobs that Minnesota was adding are jobs that are traditionally held by more women, things like jobs in healthcare and education, where Minnesota had very strong job growth over this time period. So it could have been that more women were finding jobs and able to have that competition among employers that I mentioned earlier. That could be driving some of that impact.
We are talking right now with David Cooper. He is a senior economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. Wisconsin has pursued a conservative agenda since Governor Scott Walker was elected. And across the border in Minnesota, Governor Mark Dayton has pursued progressive policies in that same time period that that the study looked at, 2010 to 2017. We're examining this study by the Economic Policy Institute that compared the two states using key metrics, trying to suss out economic performance and family well-being over the course of 7 years. Your questions, your thoughts are welcome at 800-642-1234. Have you lived in both Wisconsin and Minnesota in the past 7 or 8 years? Have you noticed a big difference in the economic policies in each state? Do you think that more regulation or less regulation helps the economy and working people? Call in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. When newly elected governors Scott Walker of Wisconsin and Mark Dayton of Minnesota, when they took office in January of 2011, the economic policy agendas that each pursued would largely define their respective states' recoveries. That is how the Economic Policy Institute senior analyst David Cooper describes in his analysis. It's his entry point to understanding how Minnesota and Wisconsin went two different policy directions, and that's led to Minnesota families being what he sees as better off by almost all indicators. The new study came out yesterday. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And you can join in with your questions, your perspectives at 800-642-1234. How do you think public policy in Wisconsin and Minnesota has impacted the economy in each state? What changes do you think should be made to the policy in either state to boost the economy? And what other factors are in play here in the economic differences between the two states? You can call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's start with Jake with a question from Milwaukee. Hi, Jake.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Thank you.
Jake, we're losing you. Try again. Hey, Jake.
Hello, can you?
There,
yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now. Yep, go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering if your guest was able to observe any significant differences between urban and rural populations over this period of time.
So, Jake, in the Twin Cities, a very urban area, Wisconsin has Milwaukee. It has a smaller community in Madison, but still a very urban area. David, what insights can we glean there?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have much to offer, Jake. The data I was looking at was primarily state-level data, so it's actually really hard to get good data that looks at what's happening in rural areas versus urban areas. So unfortunately, I don't think I have much to answer Jake's question, but certainly over the last several years, a lot of the growth that we have seen nationwide has occurred primarily in more metropolitan areas. So I suspect that, we've probably seen similar trends in both states. I don't know whether there were significant differences in those trends between the two states.
Well, some have said that Wisconsin's decision to locate the seat of its government in the same small city as its largest university was a mistake that slowed economic growth, kept people from wanting to move to the largest city, Milwaukee. That's opposed to Minnesota, which has, of course, the Twin Cities, a larger metropolitan area for its capital and its major universities. So is there something behind that?
I mean, it's possible, yeah, for sure. A lot of research has been done that has looked at this phenomenon that economists call agglomeration economies, that basically when you stick a bunch of, when you stick two cities together or you stick a bunch of industry together, it can sort of build off of each other. You have these spillover effects that lead to faster growth. And that's certainly possible. That's certainly one of the reasons why Minnesota has done better in recent years. But again, as I said earlier, the trends were fairly similar in the last business cycle. So it's not like the Twin Cities just sprouted up in 2010 and led to this shift in the job trajectories of the two states. These are factors that have been in existence for a long time. And I would also note that, Governor Walker had the opportunity to foster a greater connection between Milwaukee and Madison with the proposal, the funds that were allocated to build a high-speed rail system between the two cities. Now, that wouldn't have moved them to the same proximity that the Twin Cities have, but it probably would have fostered some tighter economic links. And unfortunately, the Walker administration decided to reject those funds and cancel that project. So, you know, there were opportunities to try and build on some of those same strengths that Minnesota has in the Twin Cities region that I think were missed opportunities.
Some people argue that Minnesota has a built-in advantage because it's managed to diversify its economy by transitioning to healthcare technology. Wisconsin, on the other hand, has remained relatively dependent on manufacturing, and that's an issue that predates both governors. How do you respond to that line of reasoning?
I think that there's some validity to that argument as well, and that's exactly why you would hope that government in Wisconsin would be taking proactive steps to try and diversify, to try and move away from being so reliant on manufacturing. Unfortunately, the path that has been chosen was to do things like reject the Medicaid expansion, reject federal dollars for investments in healthcare that could have led to a greater increase in the state's healthcare workforce. The state cut funding for public education, which could have grown education jobs in the state. And lately, as we've been hearing about in the news lately, the state has offered tremendous tax breaks to Foxconn, another manufacturer. It certainly helps to add jobs wherever you can get them, but it seems like the focus is still on trying to do whatever it takes to get these manufacturing jobs, whereas, as you put it, Minnesota has taken the path of trying to diversify, which I think has made them a little more resilient in the face of some of these larger economic trends, these international trends that we saw playing out in the recession, where we had job losses in industries like manufacturing.
Let's go to Christopher joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Christopher.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call and for bringing this onto the air today. I am actually driving to Minnesota from Chippewa Falls right now. I'm a carpenter, and I can make considerably more money working in Minnesota, about an hour and a half from home, than I can in my local area. So it is worth it for me to make this drive and work 4 days a week in Minnesota rather than 5 days a week or six in my local area in Chippewa County. I think that's just being a carpenter comes down the pipeline of just the development and growth that's taking place in Minnesota right now versus the more stagnant growth in western Wisconsin. I would like to add, though, as far as policy is concerned and that discussion goes, that a lot of folks that I know in Minnesota have told me explicitly that they do not want to move to Wisconsin because our schools are so much worse than they are in Minnesota. Their kids are much better off being educated across the border in Minnesota, where teachers make anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 a year more than our teachers do right off the bat, starting salary. And obviously that changes depending on where you go. But overall, the teachers are treated better, the schools are more well-funded, and the kids are getting better education. And that, I think, is an important thing to note because it's not just this short-term look at the last decade of policy. That right there is going to have resounding influence over the next generation. So,
Christopher, thanks for your thoughts. Christopher there in the action as he's driving from Wisconsin to Minnesota for work, for labor there. David, your observation in two different points he's bringing up.
Yeah, I think Christopher's making some fantastic observations. It's really interesting to hear that he makes that drive. Construction job growth in Minnesota over this period was phenomenal. The state's construction industry grew by about 39%, which is a lot faster than the U.S. average. In contrast, Wisconsin's job growth was about 26%, which is a little below the U.S. average. So there has been this huge growth in construction jobs in Minnesota, which is probably why Christopher is able to make more money in Minnesota because there's greater competition for construction workers. Wages are being bid up. Also, Wisconsin, as we know, did a lot to hamper the unions there. There was a huge decline in unionization in Wisconsin after the passage of Act 10 and the state's right to work law. And when you reduce the share of folks in a union, that lowers wages. That lowers wages both for union and non-union workers. So I think that that's probably why Christopher is able to get a better deal by driving over to Minnesota. I think the point he makes about education is also really important, that when the state is choosing where to put its money, I think when you make these investments in things like public education and infrastructure, that not only can create jobs in the short term from the folks who are getting those public sector jobs and then going out and spending that money, but it also sets the state up for better performance in the long term. It sets the state up for faster productivity growth and greater efficiencies over the long term, so that, you know, hopefully you can have a more natural job growth over the long term in a variety of different industries, as we were talking about earlier, as opposed to just using tax breaks to try and attract one particular company that you know could be gone 10 years from now.
Let's circle back to unions for a moment. What were the, with Act 10, what were the practical financial implications of Act 10 for Wisconsinites? What did we see in union membership? And how do you make then that connection between union membership and a family's well-being and this comparison between Minnesota and Wisconsin? There's a lot of connecting the dots here.
Sure. So first of all, let's be clear. It wasn't just Act 10. Act 10 was the Budget Repair Act that basically did a lot to undermine the state's public sector unions. And then a few years later, Wisconsin passed a right-to-work law, which has done a lot to detriment the state's private sector unions. So the combination of those two things has led to a decline in the share of workers in Wisconsin who are covered by a union of almost 6 percentage points. That's the largest decline of any state between 2010 and 2017. In contrast, Minnesota's unionization rate declined by about 0.4 percentage points, which is actually a little less than the national average. When the share of workers that are covered by a union goes down, what that means is that, you know, we know from empirical studies that union workers get paid more, they earn higher wages. And when non-union employers have to compete with the unionized employers, the unionized workforce, they have to raise their wages too in order to attract and retain workers and compete with those union shops. So if you have less union density, if you have fewer workers that are in unions, then that's going to have a depressing effect on wages, both for the folks who are in a union, but also for the folks who are not in a union, but work in the same industries, and their employers no longer have to compete with those union wages. And so that's how the declining unionization rate can impact the larger economy, can impact the welfare of families more broadly, because you just don't have the same upward wage pressure that happens when you have higher union density.
We're talking with David Cooper right now. He's with the Economic Policy Institute, senior economic analyst there. New study comparing Wisconsin and Minnesota's economies between 2010, 2017, and looking at the impact to families. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What about regulation? Do you think more regulation or less regulation helps the economy and working families? What about paid leave, unemployment benefits, raising the minimum wage across the border in Minnesota, tax cuts versus tax hikes? We've been talking about unions, collective bargaining powers, and other policies. So what is the secret sauce? What's best for the economy? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to John now, joining us from Oconto. Hi, John.
Good morning. My kind of just take on this whole thing, on this subject, is all these comparisons are for, you know, the big urban areas of the Twin Cities. And how about those of us that they're making all the comparisons, but nobody's living there? All the people that are making the comparisons are taking the benefits of living in the state of Wisconsin, but yet they're talking about how it's so much nicer in Minnesota. If it's so much nicer in Minnesota, why don't these people move to Minnesota?
So are you saying, like, take some of these policies that have been made in Minnesota and put them into action in Wisconsin? Or if saying if you don't like it here in Wisconsin, just move to Minnesota?
Correct.
So what do we know, David Cooper, about migration?
Yeah, so actually, I don't know whether folks have been moving specifically to Minnesota, but Wisconsin has had declining net migration, has had negative net migration over the last 7 years. So in other words, more folks have been moving out of Wisconsin to other states than have been moving into Wisconsin from other states. Between 2010 and 2017, the state had a net domestic exodus of nearly 70,000 people. So in other words, 70,000 more folks were leaving Wisconsin for other states than were moving in from other states. Now, to be fair, over the same period, Minnesota also had a negative net migration amount for the same period. They had a decline of about 32,000 net loss in domestic migration. But that trend has actually flipped in the most recent year. In the most recent year, from 2016 to 2017, Minnesota had about 8,000 more folks moving into the state from other U.S. states than folks leaving. In contrast, in Wisconsin, more folks are still leaving the state than are moving to it. About 2,000 more folks left Wisconsin than entered it from another state over the last year.
So why did that migration statistic flip for Minnesota from 2016 to 2017?
You know, I would be speculating if I were to say that. I think that one could make the case that that the superior job growth that Minnesota has had might be attracting folks. The previous guest, Christopher, was talking about the better schools. Now, I don't live there, so I can't say much about the quality of the school system. But good public education, there have been studies that have shown that the thing that drives migration primarily is availability of jobs and the quality of the educational system. Folks want to live where they can find good work and where their kids can go to a good school. And so I think that making investments in education and making sure that jobs are growing strongly and good jobs are growing strongly is a pretty good magnet for migration.
Wisconsin recently launched this ad campaign specifically in markets like Chicago and the Twin Cities, trying to convince young millennials to relocate to Wisconsin. So we're very aware of this issue of people leaving the state. But do you really think the exodus from Wisconsin is related to public policy?
Well, you know, I think that it certainly plays a role. I think that when the message that's being sent is we're going to cut our public sector, we're going to cut education funding, we're just going to lower taxes, primarily for businesses, I think that can send a signal to folks that this may not be the place I want to invest my family for the coming years. This is not the place where I want to plant roots because I don't know what things are going to look like 10 years from now. Whereas, you know, if I'm seeing strong job growth in a neighboring state, if I can get higher pay in that state, or I can see that the state is making investments in their school systems, that may seem like a safer bet for a place that I want to spend the money, buy a home, plant my family.
The think tank, the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, looked at a raft of data over the past 7 years. The upshot is, from this new study out, that Minnesota has fared better under Democrats than Wisconsin has under Republicans. We're looking more deeply at the metrics, what they mean here on The Morning Show. The EPI's senior economic analyst and the report author, David Cooper, is with us. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Perhaps it's regulation, less regulation, that helps the economy and working families. Do you see a difference? Have you lived in both states during the past 7 or 8 years? Are there differences that you see that play into your family being in one state or the other? What questions do you have about the study? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the discussion after a news update right here on the Ideas Network. The report from the Economic Policy Institute demonstrates that because Wisconsin and Minnesota share so many traits and a border, it seemed to offer a natural case study in how two different governing philosophies have shaped economic recoveries since the Great Recession. So the study breaks out a lot of numbers and shows indicators of Minnesota outperforming Wisconsin by almost every measure. We're talking about the new study and the takeaways here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The report's author, David Cooper, is with us. He is EPI's senior economic analyst, and the report is titled, As Wisconsin's and Minnesota's Lawmakers Took Divergent Paths, So Did Their Economies. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you lived in both states during this study period in the past 7 or 8 years? Have you noticed differences in economic policies and quality of life in each state? What sticks out to you? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go back to the phones now with Amy joining us from Beloit. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. Okay, I am the mother of a senior in high school who has chosen to go to the University of Minnesota. With some relief, actually, to me, given that a lot of the university campuses throughout the state have really taken a hit under some of the policy changes in Wisconsin. I know that Stevens Point recently dropped 12 majors. I know La Crosse has had some trouble with keeping up with some of their kids completing their majors as well. And the University of Minnesota has a reciprocity with those of us here in Wisconsin that is becoming really a big benefit to us. And then I know that one of his friends had been accepted to Wisconsin, was all set to go, and now he changed his mind at the last minute, and he will also be going to the University of Minnesota. And I just wonder if there's a policy that maybe impacted our young people that way as well.
Amy, thanks for the question. Amy is also pointing out that there is that reciprocity for the colleges to go across the border. David Cooper, what impact are you seeing there with these young people, these 18-year-olds deciding to go to college in Minnesota?
Well, I think a lot of this comes down to funding for education. And this is what the previous guest, Chris, was saying, too, is that, you know, over this time period, Wisconsin made some pretty dramatic cuts to its funding for its public education systems, including the University of Wisconsin system. Whereas, in contrast, Minnesota has kept funding stable or increased their funding over this time period. Wisconsin's philosophy was, we want to be able to cut taxes, and so we need to make these budget cuts in order to accommodate those tax cuts. And I think it's, you know, the state may be shooting itself in the foot because, as we were saying earlier, if you want to set yourself up for long-term growth, for the ability to diversify an industry, to attract companies, but also to attract young people to want to stay there and set down roots and settle in these cities, then, you know, you have to make the investments so that the education system is good, so that folks want to come to your state and work there and live there. And I think what Amy is describing is just evidence of what's happened as a result of these differences in funding for the state's higher education systems.
I think this is a really good point in the conversation to point out that Minnesota doesn't have everything figured out, that there are still racial inequities in Minnesota. Yeah. There's poverty rates that are high, jobless rates, severe racial segregation in urban areas. So what do we know about that?
Yeah, I mean, you said it all, Kate. There are still a lot of inequities in Minnesota. The state is far from a utopia. It has problems that it needs to address, and some of these racial disparities, particularly in the inner city areas, are a big part of it. There's been a lot of controversy around the funding for the education systems in some of the inner city districts. There's been fights over the expansion of charter school systems and a lot of consternation about whether the decisions that have been made are having a disproportionate impact on communities of color. And I think that these are questions that the state has to take a hard look at if they want to make sure that the progress that the state is seeing overall is being felt by all of their residents and not being disproportionately felt by just certain pockets of the state community.
Let's go to Heather now joining us from Madison. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you? Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
So I had a lot to say about this. I actually did my undergraduate degree in Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, moved abroad for a while. My family and I came back to Wisconsin for about 10 years, and then we were actually part of this exodus that you were talking about. After all of the things that happened, I'm a teacher with Act 10. I made it for about 3 years, and the situation in the schools had degraded to the point that we moved to Europe, actually. we moved to Europe, and I'm back right now teaching for about 3 months, but I'm actually actively looking for something outside of the state again, just because there's a teacher shortage right now in the school system. It's stretched very thin. I have lots of colleagues who would be sort of your 20-year in, you know, veteran teachers that have been leaving the state in droves. And, I mean, yes, that takes away from the education system, but it's also a loss in families that used to have stable incomes and, you know, are raising their children and, you know, sending them to the university system. And those people are leaving. They're not going to be here. And I don't see that trend changing right now.
Really interesting observations there. David Cooper.
Yeah, so I would make 2 points on this. You know, the first one is I think it's really interesting to think about what Heather's describing in the context of what we've been seeing across the country lately with the teacher strikes and teacher walkouts in other states, where in a lot of states that have predominantly conservative governments, they've made these huge budget cuts. They've, particularly in the education systems, teachers have been underpaid to the point where they're walking off the job in huge numbers and demanding pay increases. You know, that could become more common in the years ahead. And I wouldn't be surprised if eventually we saw something like that in Wisconsin if the trends continue for all the reasons that Heather's describing. The other point that I would make is that I think folks don't often realize how important public dollars can be for the private sector as well. We know from studies that for basically every dollar you put into, you spend on public expenditure, you get about 41 cents of economic activity on average in the private sector. Because when you give money to a teacher, that teacher goes out, they spend that money. Maybe in some cases they even buy books or school supplies for their school. And that spending, you know, gets filtered out into local economies and they go out to eat. They, you know, it's money that trickles out from the public system. So when you're making cuts to the public sector, you're not just cutting the public sector, you're also harming the private sector as well.
David Cooper, did you find any similarities between these two specimens, these two states, even though you were looking actively for differences?
Yeah. Well, there were some similarities for sure. I mean, one thing is that both states have really good labor force participation. So in other words, both states are at really close to the top nationally in terms of the share of the population that is working or looking for work, participating in the labor force. So that's good. You know, some of the currently, if we were to look at unemployment rates between the two states, they're very similar. They're very close. Now, as I said earlier, there are some things that I think are important to keep in mind when looking at those sort of top line statistics. But right now, you know, it looks like both states are getting to a point where their labor markets are relatively healthy. But I think the path they've taken to get there has been very different. And I think that it's led to some more damaging impacts on Wisconsin families, whereas Minnesota families have fared a lot better.
One of the points in your study that we haven't gotten to in this conversation is health care. Under the Affordable Care Act, Minnesota accepted a $1.2 billion federal grant to set up the exchange, expand Medicaid. Wisconsin didn't accept federal funding to set up an exchange or expand. So what were the results of each state's policies in the healthcare sector for Minnesota and Wisconsin?
Well, not surprisingly, we saw a much larger increase in the share of folks that had insurance in Minnesota than we did in Wisconsin. The proportion of people in the state without any sort of insurance declined by about 5.7 percentage points in Minnesota, declined by about 4 percentage points in Wisconsin. And what's interesting is that you know, when you increase eligibility for Medicaid, we would expect to see a larger increase in the share of the population that has government-provided health insurance. And sure enough, in Minnesota, we did see a larger increase in the share of folks that have government health insurance. But what's noteworthy is that we also saw an increase in the share of folks that had private sector health insurance in Minnesota as well. I think a lot of that can be attributed to just the stronger job growth, the fact that more folks were able to find jobs in Minnesota, and probably a good share of those jobs may have provided health insurance as part of their compensation. But I think it also just goes to show that if the philosophy, if the thinking was, well, we're not going to expand Medicaid, that will encourage more folks to take up private insurance in Wisconsin, it doesn't look like that it worked out that way.
Let's go to Laura in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi. I just want to put my two cents worth in, having lived in Wisconsin for a long time, moved to Minnesota, lived there for many years, and then moved back to Wisconsin. I think it would be really beneficial just to kind of try to look at the two states from a mom perspective for a minute. And I can tell you that as a young person, graduating from college in Wisconsin and then deciding where to live, Minnesota was abundantly attractive even, 10, 15 years ago. This didn't happen in the last 7 years.
And Laura, because we are so super short on time, I really hate to do this to you. David Cooper, final thoughts.
Yeah, I certainly think that some of these trends may pre-exist these two governments. That is certainly the possibility. The point I would make is that when Governors Walker and Dayton came to power and they had pretty strong majorities eventually of their parties in their state legislatures, they had the opportunity to try and shape what the future would look like. And I think what I would say is that in Wisconsin, unfortunately, the path that was chosen did not shift things in a direction that would ultimately help.
David, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
David Cooper is a senior economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, and he joined us from NPR headquarters in Washington. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina, Colleen Leahy, and the Ideas Network director, Cheryl Gasser. Michael Deringer provided technical support. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation is on the Ideas Network.